Now we're holding on page 22 in Yuma, about four lines from the bottom, middle of Isla Bays. We started learning yesterday that there was a story where two Kohanim were racing each other up the ramp of the Mizbeach to see who was going to get to do the Tumas HaDeshen, and one of them took out a knife and stabbed the other one. So we said, Amud Rav Tzadik on Mila Sa'ulam Bahara Bayis V'chula. So Rav Tzadik, we said, stood on the steps of one of the hallways in the Harabayis to be speaking from a high place where everybody could hear him. And he calls out and he says, you know, when it says, the Pasuk describes the case of an Egla Arufa, here, who are we going to be bringing an Egla Arufa for? The whole city of Yerushalayim or for the Azar? So the Gemara asks, Yerushalayim Basasriya Egla Arufa, is Yerushalayim in fact a place that would bring an Egla Arufa? V'hatanya, we learn in a braisa, Sored Varnim Nemrim Yerushalayim. There are 10 special dinim about Yerushalayim, V'zuhi Achas Mehem, and one of them is Einim Aviyah Egla Arufa. That if they don't bring an Egla Arufa. All of them are listed in Bava Kama, but one of them in particular, the Pasuk mentions about Egla Arufa, that it takes place when you find a body outside the city in the land that Hashem gave you to inherit. Now here we're talking according to the opinion that Yerushalayim, we learned earlier in the Masechta, that Yerushalayim was not divided among the Shvatim, that it was the common property of all the Jewish people. The Ritva points to this, so they're not bringing an Egla Arufa in the first place. So the Ritva points out, why don't we say that Reb Tzadik is following the opinion who says that it was. One answer is that's only the opinion of Rabbi Yeshua. We would rather say that Reb Tzadik's statement is according to everybody. And besides that anyway, the fact is that the Gemara is going to point out another point anyway. After all, the Pasuk says that you bring an Egla Arufa and you don't know who killed him. Here they knew who killed him. So what does Reb Tzadik mean anyway? What it means is he wanted to increase the crying. He wanted everybody to realize what a terrible thing had happened over here. So therefore, it's true. He's not saying as a matter of halacha that there would possibly be an Egla Arufa. He's saying that in order to make them realize what had the gravity of what had happened over here. The Ritva explains, in other words, that he's saying, look, we see the Torah is so careful, even when there's only a suffix whether somebody killed him, and you still have to go through the whole rigmarole with an Egla Arufa. How much more so over here, where they know who killed him, and on top of that, it was in the Beis Mikdash, that everybody should realize the gravity of it. Marsha points out another point also, which we touched on yesterday, is that, in effect, Reb Tzadik is saying, in this case, it's even worse than if we had found it outside the city. We found it outside some other city. Fine, there could be a kapara through the Egla Arufa. Now, how are we even supposed to have a kapara when Yerushalayim and certainly the Azara does not bring an Egla Arufa? The story had continued. The father of the young man who had been stabbed came and found that his son wasn't quite dead yet, and he tells them, look at that, the knife is not tummy. And the Brai said that taught you, that teaches you that the concept of Tara of Kalim, they took that more seriously than Shvichus Damim, which shows that they had their priorities skewed. So Iboilu. So the question is, Hey Minayu Chamira. What is it that they were more stringent on than they should be? Is it shvichus damim hu dezila? Is it that they had gotten careless? They didn't consider shvichus damim to be that serious, as we learned yesterday. Marsha says, based on the pasuk the Gemara had brought, that apparently there was still a hangover of that from Menashe's times. So is it that now they didn't treat shvichus damim with the gravity that it should? As far as the concept of Tara of Kalim, that remained as it was. They're not more machmir in it now in this time than they were before. They have gotten lax with Shvichus Damim. Maybe Shvichus Damim they still considered to be a very grave thing. But what happened was that people were more machmir on Taras Kalim. So we know they treated Taras Kalim more seriously than Shvichus Damim, but is that because of a laxity in Shvichus Damim, or is it because of an extra overfrumkeit in Taras Kalim? What's the nafkamina in it? But Yahyada points out, for one thing, we had earlier in the Masechta when we talked about the Averis, for which the first versus the second Beis Mikdash was destroyed, And we said the second Beis Hamikdash was destroyed because of Sinas Chinam. If we say that Shvichos Damim, that they were treating it more casually, then that explains, in other words, so now we can say that their Sinas Chinam is indeed equal in gravity to Avodah Zarah, Gila Arayis, and Shvichos Damim. But if they still treated Shvichos Damim as a very serious matter, then we wouldn't necessarily have a basis to say that.
Even one of the seven Misses may know.
It is indeed one. Well, that's the question, but yeah. Toshma, midka nosiv latamoda. Well, since the Gemara had brought the pasuk, the Braisa had brought the pasuk, the gam dam noki shofak Menashe harbe, that Menashe spilled a lot of innocent blood, and as Maharsha said, even though this story happened hundreds of years later, still it means there was an after effect of it even then. Shmamina shvichas damim hudazila. Therefore, we see what happened was people were treating shvichas damim not as seriously as they should have. The taras kelim, for the kaima, taras kelim remained as it was. They weren't being more machmir in that, but they had gotten lax with considering how serious and how terrible shvichas damim is. Shmamino, so that proves it, that they had that mentality. They didn't realize the severity of shvichas damim. Marsha mentions, by the way, over here, when we say the father came and said, he said, my son's not dead yet, and he uses the word harehu kaparaschem, Marsha explains, in keeping with what he said, that Reb Tzadik was trying to get everybody to cry, realizing we don't even have a kapara, because this is in a situation where we bring the egla rufa, the father, in effect, is saying, we do have a kapara, my son will be your kapara. Which also, maybe goes with this point, in other words, that they're treating Shvichos Damim as not serious enough. Like, how could you say such a thing that he was killed? Oh, well, he's a kapara. So that shows, in other words, that their priorities were skewed, as we're saying.
What's the saying they say when someone's nifter and you're writing somebody else?
You're right. When a person's parent has passed away during the year, during the 12 months after they passed away, you write, Hareini kaparas mishkavai. I am the kapara for his rest. Meaning, in other words, he might have to have a spell in Gehenna. So instead, I should take that on myself. I should be the kapara on behalf of my parent or my rebbe or whatever. Yeah, well, the rebbe wrote it for during the year after the Friedrich Rebbe's Estalkus, and then many people did that during the year after the Rebbe's in. Okay. Omer lahem amamuna perek shlishi. So this perek gets back to the avodah of Yom Kippur per se. And the first thing it describes is that they had to know for a fact that the sun has, that dawn has broken before they start the avodah of Yom Kippur. Because the Mishnah goes on to mention that one time, and then the Gemara mentions it was late in the month when the sun rises, when the moon rises early in the morning or very late at night, like 2 or 3 in the morning, they saw the moon rise, they thought it was the sunrise, and they started the avodah. They even got as far as Shechet and the Korban Tomid, and then they realized their mistake and they realized that it was possible. So from then on, they always had Omer lahem amamuna. So the Mishnah starts off by saying, the one in charge would tell them, go check whether dawn has broken yet. And the Mishnah goes on to talk about that. So now, after it talks, so after the Gemara talks about a little bit what exactly, how light does the sky have to be in order to be able to start the avodah of the day. So now the Gemara talks about a similar point as far as when they could tell based on the shadows when it's noontime. So Omer of Safrat, Sloisa de Avram, became a Shachri Kosli. The Tefillah of Avraham, which means, so Rashi says Tefillah se Erev Shaloi, but we don't mean Erev as in the evening Tefillah as in Mayrev, we mean Mincha. So that Tefillah starts, the time of it starts, Mikima Shachri Kosli, once the walls start darkening. So Rashi describes, in other words, you have a wall facing towards the east. In the morning, the sun is shining down on that side of the wall, therefore it looks very white. Then you have the sun is as close as possible to overhead come Chatzos in Yerushalayim. At the latitude of Yerushalayim, it's never quite overhead. It's a few degrees, even at the height of the summer, it's a few degrees off the vertical, but it's exactly between east and west. It's due south. Then it starts moving towards the west, and once it starts moving towards the west, then the east side of the wall starts darkening with a shadow. So Rav Safra is saying, once that point is reached, then you can already daven mincha. Why are we calling it Sloisa de Avraham? We usually associate mincha with Yitzchak. So there's a couple of explanations. Tosfos Yishonim says that Avraham davened it also. The Gemara is going to mention soon that Avraham kept the whole Torah. However, he didn't make it a kvius for the whole family or for everybody else. It was his own personal tefillah. Yitzchok was the one who established it for everybody. So therefore, we talk about in Brachas, tefillahs ovos tiknum, that the tefillahs were established by the ovos, and Yitzchok established mincha. We have in this week's parasha where it says, Vayetze Yitzchok lasuach basadeh, that Yaakov went and Yitzchok went out to daven in the field towards evening, but Avraham, in fact, had been davening before that, just that Yitzchok is the one who made it a permanent thing. Marsha brings another point that the Oruch says, brings from the Goyim, that we're mentioning Avraham because he's the first of the others and he's like the most important among them. So therefore, so we attribute it to Avraham, even though in fact it was Yitzchak who said it out. So that tefillah, Rav Safra is saying, once the walls start darkening on the east side, then it's time to daven mincha. So Rabbi Yosef says, should we be getting up and learning from Avraham? Meaning, so again, there's a few different ways of explaining what Rabbi Yosef's question is. He can mean, where do we see that just because Avraham was such a zoriz, does that mean, and he davened as soon as possible after Chatzos, that we should do that as well? There is, by the way, another explanation in that regard, that we're calling it the tefillah of Avraham. We know when it comes to mincha, you have two times, mincha gola and mincha ktan. So one of the mefarshim, an Ein Yaakov called Ein Eliyahu, gives an explanation that when Avraham got up to daven for Sidurim, and he's arguing with Hashem at 50, 45, etc., tzaddikim, that was right after Chatzos. So therefore, the Gemara is referring to that over here, whereas Yitzchak davened it close. When you have a Yetze Yitzchak, Lasuach Basod, Lefnois Oreb, in this week's parasha, that refers to he was davening Mincha Ketana closer to the evening. So that would be another reason why the Gemara is attributing it to Avraham. Anyway, so when Yosef is asking, Ananma Avraham Nikum v'Nigmar, so one explanation it is, are we supposed to learn from Avraham to be zrizim, to be so quick and eager to do the mitzvah as Avraham? So that's one way of learning the question. Another way of learning the question is he's asking, this is the Aruch explains, how can we learn from Avraham? Avraham lived before Matan Torah. In general, we don't learn the details of how to do mitzvahs from things that were before Matan Torah. In fact, the Rambam has an expression about that, that any mitzvah, even you have the few mitzvahs that were given before Matan Torah, Bris Milah, for example, or Gidah Noshe, we don't do those because those were given to Avraham or to Yaakov, respectively, we do those because they were given to Moshe Rabbeinu. And Moshe wrote for us in the Torah, at Hashem's dictation, that Hashem had originally given them to Avraham and to Yaakov, respectively.
What about Yaakov marrying two sisters?
Ah, so we'll talk about that more on the base, but we'll get to that soon, yeah. Anyway, so two ways of understanding Rabbi Yosef's question. Omar Rabba, so Rabba says, why not? Tana gomami Avraham ba'anan le'gamirin minei, the Tana of a Brisa learns from Avraham as far as a detail of a mitzvah. And you want to say we shouldn't learn from him? So yes, you're arguing we shouldn't have to learn from Avraham Zerizos. Sure we do. The Tana of a Brisa learns from him. Or, according to the Aruch's explanation, Avraham was before Matan Torah. Nevertheless, we can learn details of mitzvahs from the way he did them. D'tanya, as we learn in a Brisa, when the Pasuk says, Vayoyim HaShemini Yimo B'saro Losa, on the eighth day you do a Bris Milah, Melamet Shekol Ayin Kosher L'Milah, the word Vayoyim HaShemini means that it's kosher any time during the day. Elishaz Zrizin Makdim in the mitzvahs. However, people who are extra careful, people who are extra eager to do the mitzvahs, will do it as early as possible. Shenema, as we find by Avraham, by Yashkim Avraham Baboker, Elamokim Asha Omar Shomas Pnei Hashem, Avraham got up early to the place where he had stood to daven to Hashem. So that's talking about after Sodom was destroyed, where he got up early the next morning to daven, and then he sees Sodom is already destroyed. The other Girsa that's on the side over here is, and this is also brought in the Gemara, is rather the Gemara is quoting the Pasuk and Marsha prefers that as well. The Pasuk by Yashkim Avraham Baboka by Yachvosh, that Avraham got up early in the morning and saddled his donkey to go to the Akeda. Because the davening for Sodom is not a mitzvah per se, whereas the Akeda is. Hashem had told him to do it. So therefore the Tana of the Brisa prefers to learn from that we see that Zrizin Makdim in the mitzvahs. So Rava is saying, Rabbi Yosef, what's your problem learning from Avraham? Yes, we should learn from Avraham Zerizos, the Tana of the Braisa does. Yes, we can learn from Avraham even though he was before Matan Torah, because we see that the Braisa does. So Elo, I'm a rubber of Yosef Hakakashle. Rather, rubber says no. You have to understand Rabbi Yosef's question is as follows. He's not asking why should we learn from Avraham or how can we learn from Avraham. His question is, so you're telling me that Avraham would daven mincha as soon as the walls started darkening on the east, meaning as soon as it's right after Chatzos. But we know the earliest mincha is not right after Chatzos. Ditnan, we learn in a Mishnah in Psachim, that so usually the Mishnah starts by saying that usually they would bring the Korban Tamid in the middle of the afternoon. Usually they would shech the Korban Tamid 8.5 hours into the day and finish being makluvin at 9.5 hours, and then they would start the Korbanos Pesach, and they would do them between then and Shvia. So over a period of 2.5 hours. Then the Mishnah goes on to describe, you have a case, Chal Arif Sochem, Lias Be'erev Shabbos, Nishchat Bevov Mechza, Bekorah Beshivo Mechza. When Erev Pesach came out on Erev Shabbos, so not only do they need extra time to bring the Korbanos Pesach, so actually, sorry, the Mishnah says on Erev Pesach, on a regular Erev Pesach, they would move it up 1 hour, because it's impossible. You're not going to be able to do everybody's Korbanos Pesach. We learned in Pesachim, sometimes there were hundreds of thousands of them. They couldn't possibly do them in 2.5 hours. So usually they would move everything up 1 hour. On Erev Pesach, they would have the Korban Tamid would be finished 8.5 hours into the day, and then they have 3.5 hours from then until Shkia to be able to bring the Korbanos Pesach. When Erev Pesach came out on Erev Shabbos, though, the Mishnah says they had to make it even earlier, because not only do they have to finish shechting all the Korbanos Pesach before Shabbos, they also have to be able to roast them before Shabbos. At the very least, the Mishnah in Shabbos mentioned they have to put it into the oven. Once it's in the oven roasting, it can be roasting on Shabbos. Usually you're not allowed to do that with food unless the oven is sealed. Here you have a heter, the Gemara explains, because B'nai Chabura Zrizin Hain, the people who are going to all eat the Korban Pesach, are careful and they're going to prevent each other from stoking the fire or blowing on the fire to make it burn better or whatever. Nevertheless, the fact is they have to put it into the oven to start roasting before Shabbos. So therefore, they need extra time, and therefore they would move it up 1 extra hour. So then the Mishnah says that they would check that when Erev Pesach came out on Erev Shabbos, they would check the Korban Pesach, they would check the Korban Tamid, rather. The Korban Pesach has to be after the Korban Tamid. Has to be after the Tamid Shabbat Arbaim. So they would check the Tamid Shabbat Arbaim 6.5 hours into the day. The Korban Veshivo Mechza, they would finish offering it at 7.5 hours into the day, and then that gives them 4.5 hours until Shtia to be able to shecht all the Korbanos Pesach and for people to take them home to wherever they live in Yerushalayim and start roasting them. The question is, Rav Safra, you're telling us that you can that Avraham would daven mincha right after Chatzos. That implies that that's also the earliest time for the Talmud Shabbat Habayim, because the schedules of the three daily tefillos correspond to the schedules of the Korbanos. So therefore, v'nishchatei mishkim eshachri kosli. So why, if you're telling me that you can daven mincha as early as right after Chatzos, why didn't they move up the Korban Tamid even earlier? After all, the whole point is they want to allow the maximum amount of time to shech the Korbanos Pesach and start roasting them, so why not move it up all the way to Chatzos? The fact that not seems to show that you actually can't start bringing the Tamid any earlier than 30 minutes after Chatzos, and therefore you can't daven mincha any earlier than that either. So that's Rabbi Yosef's question. But the Gemara says, "My kusha, why is that so difficult?" The Duma Koisle de Bes Medrash B'Sheish Mechza Meshachri. You could say the walls of the Bes Mikdash only start darkening, the east-facing walls, only at 6.5 hours in the day, Mishum Galei Mechavni Tuva, because they're not perfectly even. Meaning, Rashi describes they taper from the bottom to the top. They're wider at the bottom, and then they taper as they go up. You go nowadays to the Koisel, you have those little windows built into the floor over there in the tunnel over there by the Koisel. And you see down over there, you can see that. You can see the rows of stones stick out more and more as you go further and further down. Originally, of course, all that was above ground at the time of the Bais Mikdash. Anyway, the point is, therefore, such a wall is not going to start darkening immediately at Chatzos, because the sun has moved a little bit, but still, because of the shape of the wall, it's not going to start darkening immediately at Chatzos. It's going to take 30 minutes for the shadows to be noticeable on it.
Yeah. Reality, though, nowadays, how does it work out?
So the earliest mincha, the halacha, is based on this gemara and based on a different gemara in brachas. The earliest is in fact 30 minutes after half a shah's manis after chatzos.
That stays the same during the year.
It's always a half a shah's manis. I mean, when chatzos is and the length of a shah's manis, of course, is going to vary throughout the year. But yeah. So that's Rabbi Yosef's question. How can Rabbi Safra say that the earliest mincha is at Chatzos when we see in the Beis Mikdash? They did it only half an hour after. So the Gemara is saying, why is that a problem in the Beis Mikdash necessarily? So they had to wait a half hour because it took time for the shadows to be noticeable on the wall because of the way they were tapered. But as opposed to maybe in fact you could daven mincha earlier technically if you have an accurate clock or if you have some other accurate way of knowing, if you have a wall where that's built in a way where it will actually start darkening with shadow immediately after Chatzos, maybe in fact you could daven then. Rabbeinu Hananel, by the way, has a different gusa and a different explanation. He says, on the contrary, it means that walls of the Beis Mikdash were mechavni tova, and he explains it means that they were exactly oriented towards the cardinal directions. When we say that a wall will start darkening with a shadow right after Chatzos, that's talking about where it's not exactly perpendicular to east or west or whatever. It's a little bit offset. But at the Beis Mikdash, Rabbeinu Hananel explains, based on other Gemaras, they made very sure that the walls of it are exactly oriented towards the four cardinal directions. So in that case, then yeah, it would take time until you start noticing shadows on it. Inami, or you could answer, Shiny Avraham did stagninus dola hoise believer. You could say Avraham was different. He had a tremendous knowledge of astronomy. Stagninus actually means astrology, but back then those were basically the same thing. So they were, and the Gemara mentions in Baba Basra, kings from all over would come to consult with Avraham about such things. So Avraham was a tremendous expert in astronomy, and he would know exactly when, exactly the moment of Chatzos, and therefore be able to start davening right after that. Everybody else is not as expert, so therefore they have to wait. Therefore, in the Beis Mikdash, the Chachamim set up a leeway of half an hour. You don't start shechting the Kohen Tumid before half a Shah's Manis after Chatzos, because you don't necessarily know the exact time, the way that Avraham did it.
How about
you
get that expertise from when Hashem took him up above?
It's possible. Maybe he got it from when Hashem took it up above the stars. Could be. Or it could be that he had it even before. I don't know. Could be. Inami mission the Zokin the Yoshiv Yeshiva Hava. Another possibility is that Avraham is different because he was a Talmud Chacham who sat in Yeshiva, meaning in other words, so therefore he had a tremendous expertise in Torah more than anybody else. So therefore he would have the expertise to know the exact moment of Chatzos, whereas everybody else might not. And where do we see that? Throughout all the times of our ancestors, there never stopped being a yeshiva among them where they're learning and teaching Torah. When they were in Mitzrayim, there was a yeshiva over there. Shenema, Hashem tells Moshe, go gather the elders of the Jewish people. Now, Rashi points out on the Pasuk, the elders obviously doesn't mean the old people. You can't possibly gather together all the old men in 600,000. It means the leaders who are teaching them Torah. So we see already that, so we see that they had a yeshiva then. The Rambam phrases it. He paraphrases our Gemara and explains that Avraham Avinu explains at the beginning of Hilchos Avodah Zarah, after he explains how people fell into the error of Avodah Zarah over the generation, he starts talking about what Avraham, the revolution that Avraham Avinu created, and he describes that Avraham taught to all of his followers, and Yitzchak and Yaakov did the same, and then they came to Mitzrayim, and almost everybody started worshiping Avodah Zarah except for Shevet Levi. So they always maintained the yeshiva even in Mitzrayim. When they were in the desert, they had a yeshiva with them. Shenemar also, you have this word ziknei. Esfali shiva mishma ziknei Yisrael. Hashem tells Moshe, gather to me 70 of the elders of Yisrael. And again, the point is Hashem is saying that they're going to be helping you lead the Jewish people, and they're going to have Ruach HaKodesh, so we're not standing talking about old people. We're talking about Talmid Chacham. Similarly, Avraham Avinu Zokin v'Yoshev Yeshiva Hada. Even back to Avraham Avinu, he was an elder of Talmud Chacham who sat and taught Torah in Yeshiva. Shenemar, v'Avraham Zokin Baba Yamin. Last week's parasha, Avraham was old coming into the days. So it doesn't just mean that he was old as in he was aged. Marsha points out, for one thing, because you already have earlier when Avraham was 100 or when he was 99, actually, Sarah says on him, v'Adoni Zokin. So therefore, there's no reason for the Torah now by Avraham Zok and Baba Yamin, which is 40 years later when he's about to find a wife for Yitzchak, there's no reason that the Torah should have to repeat again that he was old. Obviously, if he was old before Yitzchak's born, he's not any younger now. It means that he was a Zokin, means that he was a Talmud Chacham. Zokin, as in a sense, was Zesha Kana Chacham. Therefore, we see that Avraham was an elder with a Talmud Chacham who sat and taught in a yeshiva. Yitzchak ben Zaken v'Yoshi b'yeshiva Havel shenem v'ahiki Zaken Yitzchak. We have in this week's parasha when Yitzchak was old. And the point is, the Ritzvah and Marashah say that now, in context, of course, the Pasuk is saying that Yitzchak was old and went blind. But after all, the Pasuk is not coming to tell us something derogatory about him. And in fact, the Ritzvah adds that, after all, a tzaddik, somebody who trusts in Hashem, as the Pasuk says, those who trust in Hashem keep on renewing and getting new strength. So why should Yitzchak be going blind just because he's old? Fine, he went blind for various reasons that Rashi mentions on the Pasuk, and the Medrash mentions a bunch of other reasons, but why would that be connected with him going, with him being old specifically? So the Pasuk should have just said, the point is, says the Ritva, what it means is because that Yitzchak wore out his eyes learning Torah. He learned Torah and was reading Torah so much that it wore out his strength and it wore out his eyesight. And therefore the Pasuk is stressing that point. That's the Ritva says that, and Marashah says that point as well. Also, Marashah says like this: why did the Gemara put the fact that they have the Zakenim in Mitzrayim and the Midbar before mentioning Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? They're chronologically first. The reason is, if we started with Avraham, then you could say, you know what, the word Zaken does mean old. Fine, maybe the Torah just wants to tell us that Avraham is old and he needs to make sure to take care of things before he passes away. And the same thing with Yitzchak and the same thing with Yaakov. Now that we find clearly in Mitzrayim and in the desert where it says Zakenim, and clearly it means Chachamim, because again, it can't stand mean old people, now we're more justified in saying that by Avraham and Yitzchak and Yaakov, it has the same meaning and not stand meaning that they were chronologically old.
What does Zaken mean again?
The word Zaken in the symbol meaning means old, but the Gemara Darshins in Ksuba, in Kiddushin, that it means Zeh Shekona Chachma. This is one who has acquired wisdom. Doesn't matter. Zaken. Zeh Kona. So we doubt in the power.
You just fill in the chokhmah.
You fill in the chokhmah, yeah. Yeah. So Yitzchak was a zokin v'yoshev b'yeshiva, shenem v'ahiki zokin Yitzchak. Yaakov Avinu zokin v'yoshev b'yeshiva ava, so was Yaakov Avinu, shenem v'eni Yisrael kovdum v'zokin, as it says, Yisrael's eyes were heavy from old age. And again, the point is the Torah is not coming to tell us something derogatory about him, and the Torah is still not saying that Yaakov was like some old people who lose their eyesight. It means that he wore out his eyesight from learning Torah. Therefore, the point is that the reason why we mention this is to say Avraham, being a Zaken, the Yosha B'Yeshiva, he would have had the extra knowledge and expertise of Torah to know the moment of Chatzos, and therefore to be able to daven Mincha right after that, whereas the rest of us don't necessarily have that expertise, and therefore we have to wait a little while after. And the Gemara continues, Eliezer Eved Avraham, Zaken v'Yoshev Yeshiva Haba. Not only the Ovis, Eliezer, the servant of Avraham, was also a Zaken v'Yoshev Yeshiva. He was also a Rosh Yeshiva. Shenemar, in last week's parasha, Vayomer Avraham Avdei Zakan Beisoy, the elder of his house, and again we're saying that the word Zakan means a Tamad Chacham, HaMosho B'chol Asheloi. It says that he controlled everything of Avraham's. Now, Marashah points out, it can't mean in the simple sense that he controlled as in the disposition of all of Avraham's wealth. It's not up to him to do that. Avraham might entrust everything to him, but it's still not Eliezer's to do with whatever he wants. Therefore, we have to understand that it means that Avraham gave him permission to be a Rosh Yeshiva and teach other people, even though now normally a Talmud is not allowed to do that, but here Avraham, the Rebbe, gave his Talmud permission to do that during his lifetime and when he's around. And in fact, he did that. So that's from Moshe B'Torah Shabbat. And similarly, when Uri or Avraham mentions him, and he says to Hashem, what's good, everything that you're giving me if I don't have a son? And he says, the only one left to inherit me is Damesek Eliezer. Why is he called Damesek Eliezer? Now, in the simple sense, and some of the Mephoshim on the Pasuk say, and Rashi mentions also, it means that he came from Damascus. Or Rashi mentions a Darash over there because he helped Avraham pursue the four kings all the way to Damascus. However, the Gemara is bothered by the fact, Marashah says, when we have, first of all, Eliezer wasn't from Damascus anyway. He was a Canaan. He was an Eved Canaan. Or, okay, there's a Medrash that says that he was a son of Nimrod. Either way, Nimrod is not in Damascus. Besides that, also, Marashah says anyway, when we have a name of a place attached to a person's name, where it means he comes from that place, you have the name first and the name of the place second. Like you have Rus Hamoyavia, for example, where you have all kinds of examples where Itai Hagiti, or lots of other examples where a person's name is given and then the place he came from. Here, Damascus Eliezer, if it meant Eliezer from Damascus, it should have said Eliezer mi Damascus, or Eliezer Damaski, or whatever the Lashon would be. Therefore, the Gemara is dashing that it means, Eliezer, who Damascus Eliezer, Omer Abelazer, Shadola Umashka Mitodas Rabbi Lachevin. Means that Eliezer drew forth and watered and gave to drink of his Rebbe's Torah to others. So in other words, again, he took the Torah that he had learned from Avraham Avinu and drew it out and poured it out and gave others to drink and gave others to learn Torah. Now, the fact is, Anaf Yosef says, so that's actually part of Avraham Avinu's complaint as well. When he says to Hashem, what's good that you're giving me, if I'm childless and the only one to inherit me is Damascus Eliezer, Avraham's point is, Eliezer is not being mechadish anything new in Torah. He's doing an excellent job drawing out the water of Torah that I've taught and teaching it to others, but he's not coming up with new chidushim in Torah on his own, and I don't want that. The whole point is, I want a son that I should, and he goes on to explain that Avraham wants a son while I'm still young enough and healthy enough to be able to teach him. I don't want, for example, that he's going to be born right before I pass away, and I'm not going to have the chance to do that. So that was Avraham's complaint, and that's why he mentions Eliezer's domestic Eliezer in that context, because therefore he's stressing to Hashem that Eliezer doesn't have the quality of being Mechadesh in Torah, which we need. Continues the Gemara. Omer Rav, Kiyem Avraham Avinu Eschol HaTorah Kula. Avraham observed the entire Torah. Shenema, as you have the pasuk in this week's parasha, Eikav Asher Shama Avraham B'Kolei Uvemer. Hashem says to Yitzchak, because Avraham listened to my voice, meaning that he kept the mitzvahs. What do you mean? How do you know that Shama Avraham B'Kolei means that he kept all of the Torah? Maybe it just means that he kept the Sheva mitzvahs and that's it. And the answer is you can't say it's just the seven mitzvahs. Ha haboy nami mila. The fact is there was also mila. Ella, Ve'ema Sheva Mitzvah Sumila. Marshall points out, actually, there are a couple of ways of understanding based on the different Gersois over here with and without the parenthesis, whether this is all part of Rav Shimon Bar Chiya's question, how could you say, you can't say that it means only the Sheva Mitzvahs, given that after all, he had the Mitzvah of Mila, and we know he kept that, but maybe we should say that it means that he kept only those eight Mitzvahs, or maybe the Gemara is going back and forth. Maybe it means he kept only the seven Mitzvahs, and the challenge is that, how can you say, the fact is we know he had Mila. Okay, so maybe he kept only the seven Mitzvahs plus Mila. So Amalei, Imkein Mitzvoyse V'seroyse Lomali. The fact is, Hashem says that I've not just that Avraham listened to my voice, Vayishma Mishmauti, he kept my guarding, Mitzvoyse Chukoyse V'seroyse. So if it didn't mean that he's keeping all the other mitzvahs as well, then what would those words be coming to tell us? Now we're saying over here that Kiyam Avraham Avinu as Kol HaTorah Kula, you actually have, Marsha points out, you have a Mishnah at the end of Masechta Kiddushin, which was a week and a half ago in Daf Yomi, that says Matsinu Sha'osa Avraham Avinu as Kol HaTorah Kula, that Avraham did the whole Torah. So that's already a Mishnah. What is Rav over here adding to what it says in that Mishnah? So Marsha explains over here that the answer might be that Tosfos Yeshanim actually asks the question and says maybe you could say that it means that Avraham kept only the mitzvahs loisas so that's also Avraham is kol HaTorah Kula. We mean he kept only the loisas and then Rav is coming to tell us that he also kept the esses. So that actually Marsha says that over here, that the word osa Avraham Avinu is kol HaTorah Kula could imply that it means that Avraham did only the loisas. As all Gemara over here, Rav is implying that he did the esses as well. There's a sifa in Chelek Lamed Hey, which is actually a hadron on a Masechta Kedushin, where the Rebbe discusses this point in some detail, and the Rebbe ends up explaining that Osa would mean that he's doing something which didn't really exist yet. He brought something into existence. In Avraham's times, the Torah hadn't been given yet, after all. So therefore, he's doing something that doesn't really exist yet. That would be called Osa. Rav over here is saying something else, that Kiyan, the mitzvahs already existed, and Avraham kept them. So yeah, and the Rebbe goes on just to discuss over there why over there it uses also and here. And he, one thing is that we said before, the Aruch explains that when Rabbi Yosef and asks the question, how can we learn from Avraham? The Aruch understands the question to be, given that Avraham was before Matan Torah, how can we learn from him? We who live after Matan Torah, how can we learn from him how we're supposed to fulfill the mitzvahs? So now the Gemara is continuing with that. Don't think that true that Avraham lived before the Torah was given, but don't think that his mitzvah observance was any different than ours. Kiyim, he kept the mitzvahs that already existed in his times. So the Gemara continues. Omer Rav, or Rava, v'item Rav Asi, Rav Ashi, kiyim Avraham Avinu afilu Erev Tavshilin. Avraham even kept the mitzvah of Erev Tavshilin, even though that is, even though Rashi points out, after all, it's not a halacha of Moshe Sinai, it's purely a takana of the Chachamim. Nevertheless, Avraham kept it. Shenemar v'soroisei, as the pasuk says, Hashem, that Avraham kept my Torahs in the plural, implying echad divrei Torah v'echad divrei sofrim. So both what it says in the Torah and what it says in divrei sofrim, he kept. So first, Marsha brings over here a discussion. Rashi brings this on the pasuk in this week's parasha, and the Mizrahi discusses on there that Rashi did not want to learn that it means that Rashi learned specifically that it means Torah shebichsav and Torah shebaalpeh rather than learning that it means things that are bottom. And Marashal says over here, not necessarily. Where you could say over here that Torah Shavah Peh includes both. It includes the Torah Shavah Peh that Hashem taught to Moshe Rabbeinu. And it would also include things of Divrei Sofim, like we're saying over here, Erev Tavshilin. So why are we singling out Erev Tavshilin? There's a number of explanations why. The Ritva says, because after all, the whole point behind Erev Tavshilin, the Gemara explains in Beitza, is Shedivra Mona Yofel Shabbos. That the whole purpose is you don't want that a person should use all the good food for Yom Tov and not save any for Shabbos. Therefore, we may have him make an Erev Tavshilin so that he'll remember that Shabbos is coming and know to put aside some good food for it. So the point is it's like a very lightweight takana. You would think how important is such a concept. Nevertheless, Abraham was careful even with that. The Marsha brings another point from Sefer Yuchsin that gives another reason. We know that Avraham spent his whole life teaching everybody in the world that Hashem had created the world, Yesh Me'ayim. Well, the point of an Erev Tavshilin is exactly that. Zohar is Yom HaShabbos L'Kadshei. And in fact, the Gemara in Beitza says the word Zohar implies Me'acher Shebola HaShtichai. You might have something else, namely the Yom Tov, that is going to make you forget about the approaching Shabbos. Therefore, the Chacham said, make an Erev Tavshilin so you don't forget about the Shabbos. Therefore, Avraham specifically made a point of keeping Erev Tavshilin precisely for that reason, since the whole point of Shabbos is to remember that Hashem created the world and rested on the seventh day. Therefore, Avraham made sure that was his signature mitzvah, because that fitted so well with what he was trying to accomplish in the world to make everybody realize that. Here, Marsha gets into the general question that you were asking before. What about, for example, we find that Yaakov Avinu did several things that you're not allowed to do up in Torah. He married two sisters. He set up a matseva. And there is a great deal of discussion about that. Here, Marsha gives an answer basically that they were all Bnei Noach at the time, and therefore those mitzvahs didn't apply to them yet. There are Rishonim who learn that Avraham and the other Avos kept the whole Torah before it was given was primarily in Eretz Yisrael. Yaakov married the two sisters in Chutz Laaretz. In fact, they give the explanation that is why Rachel passed away shortly after they came into Eretz Yisrael, because at that point he's obligated to keep all the mitzvahs, including not to marry two sisters, and therefore he couldn't be married to two anymore. There's a sicha where the Rebbe talks about the idea behind it. Yaakov had promised to marry Rachel. Now, in the end, Lavan tricked him and gave him Leah. Nevertheless, Yaakov can't break his promise to Rachel, because that's a requirement for him not to marry two sisters. Is a chumrah, because after all, like Marsha's saying over here, at this point they're all considered bnei noach. And for that matter, when Rachel and Leah become giyoris, then a giyoris is not considered related to any of her relatives anyhow. So as it is, they're not even considered two sisters in halacha. But there was a chiyuv on him to keep his promise, and therefore he has to do that, even if it means marrying the two, even if it means overriding his what at that point is his personal chumrah of not marrying two sisters. In any case, there are places in Chassidus where it talks about a lot of the things that when we talk about the obvious keeping the Torah before it was given, we don't always mean that they kept it in the gashmiistic sense. After all, there's many mitzvahs that require certain gashmiistic things to do, and those didn't exist yet. What we mean is they had the kavanos, and they accomplished things that accomplished the same things, lamaila, as the mitzvahs that we do. For example, you have when it talks about the idea that Yaakov with the sticks over there, with the spots and stripes on them, he accomplished with that what we accomplished with the mitzvah of tefillin. There are lots of other examples of that, of things. An example that talks about Siddus is the mitzvah of wiping out Amalek, which involves fighting against Das of Klippa. So the Ovis are able to do that, even though the historical nation of Amalek didn't yet exist in their times, and so on and so forth with many other mitzvahs.
The next piece says the donut Timur.
What's Timur? Let's learn that now. We have time to talk about it. So Tanya, continuing, top of page, your Gimel. Now, so the Gemara. So again, the Mishnah had mentioned that one time in the Beis Mikdash they made a mistake. It was late in the month. The moon was rising early in the morning, and they thought that it was the sun rising. So they started shechting the Korban Tumid, and then they discovered their mistake. And that's why we said from then on is why they had somebody climb up to the top of the wall and actually check whether the east side of the sky is lit up and it's time to check the Korban Tumid. So now the Gemara asks the question, why did they need to do that? Doesn't the light of the sun, when it's rising, doesn't it look different than the light of the moon? So Tanya, Rebbe Omer, Eina Doma, Tumah Shel Levana, L'Tumah Shel Chama, the column of light that comes from the moon is not like when it's rising, is not like the column of light that comes from the sun. Tumor shalavonim matamar v'ola kamako. The one from the moon goes straight up like a stick. Tumor shalcham matzia l'kan l'kan. When the sun is rising, you have rays of it shining in various directions. So it should have been obvious, therefore, when they saw a solid column of light, they should have realized that the moon rising. How could they make such a mistake? And the Gemara answer is it was a cloudy day, and therefore, so now the moon is behind clouds, and therefore also you don't see one solid column of light. Instead, they also saw there were patches of light here and there, and that's why they thought it was sunrise. Which now leads into the next piece of Gemara. Omer Rachram, or of Nachman, Zihara or Zuhama de Shimsha, Kishimsha or Kosha Mishimsha. Different stories over here. The Zihara means the rays. Zuhama would mean like the heavy heat. Meaning, in other words, Rashi describes when you have like this, you have a cloudy day. Again, you don't see the sun in one place. You have the rays of the sun that peek out here and there from behind the clouds. So that's Zira. Zuama would mean on that on a day like that, you also have it's very very sultry and hot and humid and whatever, that kind of thing. Kosha Mishimsha is even harsher for people than the sunlight itself. Meaning, when you have the sunlight, when the sun is shining down and it's a cloudless day, then that's it can be very uncomfortable. But like this, when you have the rays peeking out here and there through the clouds, then it has even more of an effect. The simonach dana dechala, the way to remember that is consider a barrel of vinegar. If you have an open barrel of vinegar, if you have it sealed, none of the smell comes out. Then if you open up a little hole in it, then already you start having a very strong odor coming out of there. The same way when you have little holes in the clouds here and there that the sunlight peeks out of, then you have a much more intense sunlight coming through those holes. The Gemara mentions the naftamina of that is when it comes to baking matzahs for Pesach, you're not allowed to knead the dough directly in the sunlight because then the sunlight will heat it up. Well, on a cloudy day, you're not allowed to do it, even not in the direct sunlight, because then you're going to have the sunlight peeking out from all over the place behind the clouds, and therefore the dough is going to get too warm. We know also when mice and macholia and people get sunburned sometimes more on cloudy days than on sunny days for the same reason, because they don't realize this Gemara. Similarly, the Gemara continues, Shabrire de Shimsha Koshi Mishimsha. The blindness from the sun is worse than from the tiny little bits, again, that peek through the clouds, is worse than when you have the actual direct sunlight. The Simonach Dilfa, a way to think about that, a simon for that, is think of a drip from the roof. When you have, if you're completely wet, you're not so uncomfortable, but you have one drip dripping on you again and again, then it's very bothersome. The same way, you have the actual direct sunlight without cloud is much less harmful to you than when you have little bits of sunlight peeking out here and there through the clouds, and you look at those, a person can get much more blinded by that. Similarly, here, hure avera koshin avera, thoughts of avera are worse than avera, and here you have a number of reasons why. Rashi says that it means whenever a person has a taiva, for example, for women, that has more of an effect on him and has more of an effect on his physical health, even more than the actual maisa of tashmish itself. And there are various other explanations. Marsha says that hirhure aveda means that a person intended to do an aveda, and in the end he did not. In the end he did something that's mutter. Nevertheless, he needs a kapara for that, even more so than for the aveda itself. And Mefarshim explained one reason for that is the Or HaChaim brings, among others, when a person did an actual aveda, he's motivated to do tshuva. A person only thought of doing an aveda, he's more likely to rationalize and think, what did I do wrong? And then there's various other points as well. The Rambam makes a point in Mor Nevuchim, given that a person's seichel is his crowning glory as a human being, so therefore when he misuses his seichel for hura aveda, then that's much worse than using his actual physical koichos for it. Anyway, the simonach recha de bisra, the way to remember that is think about the odor of meat. When a person smells the odor of roast meat, that's much harder for him than not being able to eat the meat itself. So the same way the thought of an aveda is worse for him than the actual aveda itself. The actual aveda is bad. It's bad enough, but we're saying that the hiru is worse. Shilei de kaita koshimi kaita. That's what we're saying. Shilei de kaita koshimi kaita. The end of the summer is worse than the rest of the summer. It's hotter and more uncomfortable because it's already hot from previously in the summer. So now you have new heat on top of the old heat. The simonach tanura shigira, a way to think of that is an oven that's already been fired up, where now it takes only a little bit of heat to get it to a very high temperature. And ishta de sitra koshim edekaita, a fever during the winter time is worse than one during the summer, because it's cold outside. So when a person has a fever, it means that it's a much more serious fever. The simonach, and a way to remember that, tanura krira. On the contrary, when you have a cold oven, it takes a lot of wood to heat it up. The same way here, when it's cold outside, it takes a lot of body heat, a lot of fever to get the person to be hot. And the last one, migma v'atika kosh mechadza, to relearn something that was old, that a person learned and then forgot, is much harder than learning something new. V'simonach tina bartina, a way to remember that is think of like taking clay that was already mixed and already made into bricks or whatever, and then breaking it apart and remaking new clay out of that is much harder. The same way when the person went through it and then forgot it, and now he's learning it again, then it's much harder. So besides for the simple meaning of all those things, the Oilus Ephraim, the Kli Yoker, and the Sefer of Doroshes has an explanation about the deeper meaning behind each of these things. It means, for example, a person tries to hide his Yetzirah. It's not going to work. It's not going to be the sun. It's not going to be like the sun peeking through the clouds. He thinks that minor Averis are nothing like clouds hiding the sun. That makes things worse. And he goes on to explain each of these in a musadika way that a person should realize that, don't play around with the Yetzirah. Just defeat it. And don't stall for time with it, etc. Okay. Yonyan Mashiach Ha'Gu'ola Chotes Chesven. In order to accomplish his galus and bias Mashiach, take from a yad, every yid has to increase in limunat Torah, especially in Mashiach Gola, and or even more importantly, kaposhet, is to continue to increase in doing mitzvahs behidr, especially hidr and mitzvahs atzadaka, mitzvahs atzadaka after all being a general mitzvah that includes all the other, and which is makarevas sagola. The proper thing is to connect this increase with tzedakah with an increase in Yonim Mashiach Gola by giving tzedakah with the kavana to bring closer the Gola, and then that way itself that becomes part of the looming Torah in Yonim Gola. Sorry, I went really late. Okay. A quick halacha, which is still talking about Shabbos candles. You make a bracha on Shabbos candles on any mitzvah over Las Yosem before you do the mitzvah. But with Hadlokas Neiros of Shabbos, you can't do that because once the woman lights candles, then she's already accepted Shabbos. So if she makes the bracha first, she won't be able to light. So therefore she lights first and then she puts her hands in front of her face so she doesn't see them, and then she sees the kid, then she sees the candles, and therefore it's considered like she made the bracha before the lighting the candles. It's brought, by the way, this is one of those interesting halachas that come, the source of it is a woman. The Prisha writes that his mother, or his grandmother, I think, came up with this concept, and it's brought in his pirush on Shulchan Aruch, and eventually it became the mainstream halacha.